Hello, welcome to the Bev Moore Show, live streaming on the iHeart Network and over 185 broadcast stations in 37 countries. I'm your host, Bev Moore. My guest today is an award-winning TV and film director. Anthony Werhahn is my guest. Anthony is a television, film, and commercial director who is known for development of the award-winning Comcast series, Voices of the Civil Rights Movement, and a documentary featuring James Hemings entitled Ghost in America's Kitchen. Stay with us. My interview with TV and film director Anthony Werhahn is coming up.
There's a name that can silence every fear. There's a love that embraces the heartache, the pain, and the tears. Through my faith and my doubting, I know one thing for sure. His word is unfailing, his promise secure. Todo va a estar bien, everything will be alright. Whole world's in his hands.
Say everything's gonna be alright, but my circumstances say I won't last through the night. I need your word to hold me now, need you to pull me through. I need a miracle, a breakthrough, I need you. They say you hold the whole universe in your hand, but my world's falling apart like it is made of sand. Am I small enough to slip through the cracks? Can you take my broken pieces and put them back? Give me faith, you believe you're on my side. Open my eyes and see you working in my life.
Te confieso a corazón abierto que todo es muy incierto en este desierto. Mi vulnerabilidad está al descubierto. Siento que mi barca está muy lejos de su puerto. ¿Por qué será que ya no sale el sol en mis días? ¿Por qué mis noches son tan frías? ¿Por qué será que siento que me falta algo? ¿Por qué este camino gris se siente tan largo? Sé que estás sobrando aunque no te sienta. Sé que estás sobrando aunque no te vea. Sé que voy a salir de esta odisea. Sé que voy a ganar esta pelea. Sé que va a cesar esta marea temporaria. Que en ti yo viviré una vida extraordinaria. Y aunque no pueda entender, me consuela saber que
todo, yo sé que faithful and he's true. Your whole world's in his hands. You don't know what's happening yet. Oh, oh, oh. Everything will be alright.
Everything will be alright.
Oh, oh, oh. Yeah. Don't know what's happening yet.
Don't know what's happening yet.
Oh, oh, oh. Everything will be alright. Oh.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands.
todo el mundo en su mano está, todo el mundo en su mano está, todo el mundo en su mano está.
My interview with TV and film director Anthony Werhahn is coming up. When we come back, Anthony talks about his work as a director, including development of the award-winning NBC Comcast series, Voices of the Civil Rights Movement. Stay with us. We will be back after the break.
As Americans, there's one thing we can all agree on: the promise of our Constitution and the hope that liberty and justice is for all people. But here's the truth. Attacks on our constitutional rights, yours and mine, are greater than they've ever been. The right for all to vote, reproductive rights, the rights of immigrant families, the right to equal justice for Black, Brown, and LGBTQ plus folks.
We protect everyone's rights, the freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, racial justice, LGBTQ rights, the rights of the disabled. We are here for everyone.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought on behalf of millions of Americans, protecting our vote and our voice. I believe in the ACLU because they're for real. To learn more about how the ACLU is fighting for your rights and mine, go to myaclu.org today.
Welcome to the Bev Moore Show, Anthony.
Bev, thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here.
Anthony, you were involved in the development of the award-winning Comcast series, Voices of the Civil Rights Movement. This platform honors the legacy and impact of America's civil rights champions. What can you share with us?
So that series has been one of the blessings of my life, and I had no idea what an unbelievable scope it was going to have at the offset. So it has now been about 10 years since we began that journey. It was early in 2013 in preparation for the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington that Comcast decided to do a commemorative series, you know, a one-time thing, multiple interviews, that was going to be part of their Comcast Newsmakers platform, special civil rights / March on Washington themed episodes for the month of August. And it went so well, and they were so pleased with the content, that they decided to build on the series a little bit more in 2014, and then 2015, and 2016. Now here we are in 2023, and dare I say, we have conducted over 200 interviews, thousands of hours. It's unbelievable, Bev. Thousands of hours of content, and I'm absolutely in love with the produced, edited content that we've created that is out on the Voices of the Civil Rights Movement.com and various other platforms with Comcast. But perhaps more importantly, a lot of these interviews have been archived with NBC Universal Archives and will now be available, you know, in antiquity. So 20 years, 50 years from now, this stuff is preserved. And one of the great things about this particular series, we did have time with John Lewis. We've had Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, a lot of the names that you would immediately think of when you think about the civil rights movement. But perhaps more importantly, there are all of these folks all across the country who were crucial parts of this story, specifically in their geography, just key players. And their stories have not all been told. And so to have the opportunity to sit down and give them a format, and a long format, to get it out and to just give us all a more complete picture of the civil rights movement as it was and still is, it's incredible. It's a project that I'm really, really proud to participate in. And it's a small group of us who were there at the very beginning and are still piecing this thing together all these years later, even though it's gotten much, much larger.
Wow. It commemorates the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington.
Yes. So that's where it started. And then it started to roam. So initially, it was called His Dream, Our Story, The Legacy of the March on Washington. Once Comcast decided to extend this and make it a more expansive civil rights collection, it was rebranded as Voices of the Civil Rights Movement. So now the content is not necessarily all anchored in the March on Washington by any means. So you've got young folks who are now interviewed who may have a story to tell outside of the confines of that era, that 1963 to 68 prime civil rights era. Most of the content does harken back to that, but it's a wider net now, and I just think it's a really good, healthy platform. It's quality documentary content, and it's just giving a platform for important stories to be told, and they all do connect to civil rights in one way or another. And you start to realize what a truly big story that is. I mean, it's one of America's defining stories.
Right. So what all is planned for Black History Month?
So for Black History Month, there's a couple of pieces that are rolling out. One of the great things that they have done at Comcast is gone back. Initially, it was a small-scale project. It was just going to be these newsmaker pieces in August of 2013. So there wasn't a terrific amount of resourcing done to get unique visuals and really, really dive deep into some of these stories. We created very, very simple four-minute documentary segments, and out they went. But now we're going back and actually taking some of these old edits, expanding them, because they no longer need to fit in this four-minute Comcast Newsmakers format. They have been freed from that, and they have done a terrific job of researching, finding, and licensing some incredibly unique visuals. B-roll, there's a lot of things that I think we're all used to. Anytime a civil rights anniversary comes around, for example, the Little Rock Nine in Arkansas, the desegregation of schools there. There's clips that are played pretty consistently in connection with that. Comcast somehow, you know, they really have an impressive research team over there. Anytime we're on a topic like that and we're going back and we are adding visuals to a piece like this, they manage to find things that I haven't seen before, which is saying a lot, because I shot probably 90-95% of these pieces, and I've edited almost all of them. So you become very familiar with what's out there, and it's tempting to think that you've seen it all. But every time I think I do, they do a great job of somehow finding some piece of media that has not been overexposed, and we're able to breathe fresh life into some of these older stories. So we have some of our older interviews coming out, some of those ones that were conducted in 2013 and 2014, but with all new visuals. And very soon, we are going to be rolling out a piece with Hank Aaron and Billy Aaron, his wife. We interviewed Hank only months before he passed away a couple of years ago, and unfortunately weren't able to do another interview with him to finish the piece. But his wife, Billy, sat down with us recently in Atlanta, and we're cutting together a really, really exciting piece, because that is, you know, that's another story people don't necessarily tie into civil rights, but Hank Aaron went through a lot in his time in Major League Baseball, and it's an interesting lens to view his story through. So that will be coming out soon. So it's this year is going to be a constant new releases. There's going to be a lot happening because of that 10th anniversary of the series, which began in 2013.
The Big Ten. What inspired you to make this film?
Well, I was just I worked for a commercial production company, Cornerstone Pictures, out of Philadelphia. And I was asked to come into a meeting. I had done it's a long, strange story. I had done a favor editing a piece together for a friend of mine who was covering this book release. I had no idea that the financier behind this book was a pretty major executive at Comcast. I mean, I truly had no idea. And I did this this video edit of a book release party, and all of a sudden I get this email from a Comcast address asking me to come in for a meeting, and I really don't know what for. But I start to piece it together. I'm like, oh, I think I remember meeting this person. So she brings me up there, and I think she was very, very happy with the editorial quality of the piece that I did, because it was we made a story, and I think made something really compelling of this event. She was happy with it and was telling me that they are, you know, embarking on a couple of new projects, and she really wants to have fresh eyes on it. I think that Sheila Willard, who was one of the executive producer at Comcast at the time, who was behind this project, really wanted a new look, new eyes, something outside of her established means and sources to sort of put something fresh out there, you know, with an old format. At the end of the day, it's talking head interviews laced together with some B-roll. But she saw something in that piece that I did for her, not knowing who she was, mind you, where she wanted to give me a crack at it. So in that, and that tells you also what a small scale project this was at first in 2013. They were willing to give me a shot at it. So I did the first 4 interviews at the Comcast Center in Philadelphia in 2013. It was sort of a trial run. And they were really happy with the look. They were happy with the edit, and off we went. So it's just one of those strange stories in life. I mean, thank God I said yes to that little favor I was doing for my friend with that video edit. It's definitely one of those lessons I always tell my kids, when in doubt, you know, say yes when you can.
It was a calling. It was calling. It had your name on it.
It is funny, isn't it, Bev, how when you really look back.
Yeah.
Cause and effect.
Yes. Well, I'm excited to find out more this month.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to be an exciting time. VoicesOfTheCivilRightsMovement.com, and it's readily available on Comcast cable platforms as well. So anybody out there who has Xfinity, if you say Voices of the Civil Rights Movement into your voice remote, content aplenty.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling.
Interview with award-winning TV and film director Anthony Warhon continues after the break.
As a veteran, you get a lot of advice. But wisdom's harder to come by. A lot of people imagine themselves in our shoes without understanding the weight on our shoulders. The truth is, few can understand the pressure of finding your own way after serving in the military. But few isn't none. You've got support. You can't control the chaos, but you can chart your way through it. Steady yourself. Take a breath. You're not alone. Learn more at MakeTheConnection.net.
Let's talk about the featured documentary, James Hemings, Ghost in America's Kitchen, that debuted at the Roxbury International Film Festival in 2021, winning Best Feature Documentary.
It has been quite the journey. Yes, we... Truly, as interesting as it, as the Comcast journey, the same applies here. It's kind of amazing that we got it to this point. So in 2021, it did premiere at that festival, and it won Best Feature Documentary. Best overall film at that festival, by the way, was Summer of Soul, which I'm very proud that we were on the same award sheet as Summer of Soul, since that ended up becoming an Oscar winner a little later. So in 2021, we had just put our feet in the water, and soon after that, we got distribution, representation, and all of these months later, we just recently released on Amazon Prime Video. And it is something that everybody in this team behind this documentary. It started with Chef Ashbel McElveen and myself. We had always sort of seen this as a calling and something that we just sort of have to do. It's another one of those things, Bev, when there's too many coincidences and just strange cause and effect things happening, I tend to follow the breadcrumbs. So the way all of this started, a friend of mine out in L.A. who was working for a company at the time that was focusing on finding books that could be adapted or stories and books. And, you know, he was only there for a short time, but he threw a book at me called Creme Brulee. And there was the book itself wasn't necessarily something that could be a film, but there was this character in it. This is about Thomas Jefferson and his time in Paris. Right after the Revolutionary War, America is in its infancy, and Jefferson is over in Paris for 4 years with some of our other founding fathers, including Ben Franklin and John Adams. And he brings with him this guy, James Hemings, who is his brother-in-law and enslaved property. Brings him over with the sole purpose of having him trained to become the first master chef in America. He wanted to take this art of fine cooking that was prevalent over in France and, you know, arm himself with the weapon of charm. Having that ability back in America, beneficial for all of us, but for him especially at the time. So he takes James over to do this because clearly he must have sensed this guy is uniquely talented and can do this. James is over in Paris with Jefferson, is running a kitchen within 2 years of being there, which is highly unusual. So Jacques Pepin, who's a modern chef and a celebrity chef today, trained in similar circumstances and says in the documentary himself, it took him much longer to achieve that status. So James was a incredibly, incredibly talented man who is responsible for bringing French fries, macaroni and cheese, whipped cream, firm ice cream. All of that came back to America via James Hemings. It all went through a slave kitchen on Thomas Jefferson's Monticello plantation. And that's not where it ends. James and Jefferson had a very interesting relationship. James is also a very important political figure who had his actions directly influenced American history. As I first got introduced to this in that book, I was almost shaken by the fact that I'd never heard of this guy. It's more interesting. Right? I know. It's right there, and the history is not necessarily hidden. There are great books that cover this time period. Other than Creme Brulee, there's a wonderful book by Annette Gordon-Reed called The Hemingses of Monticello, and it goes through all of it in great detail and very, you know, the historical details are all there. But somehow this story just kind of gets grazed over. And I met by complete coincidence, and this is at a time when I'm really, really taken with the idea of what do we do with this story? Because I'm working on this civil rights project, so you start to get an ear for lost, important stories that need to be preserved. And once I was exposed to this, I really, really wanted to figure out, like, what can I do with this? And I meet, just utter coincidence, Chef Ashbel McElveen, who is the founder of the James Hemings Society. We happen to have a mutual friend. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I almost fell over. So once that happened, I knew it's too much. It's too strange. I'm going to have coffee with this guy, and I'm going to go wherever the road leads. And James Hemings' Ghost in America's Kitchen started off as a sales tape. We put together 3 minutes of, I think, really compelling content, and we weren't sure if we were pitching a narrative film, a scripted film, an unscripted documentary or docuseries. Frankly, we kind of tailored it to whoever we were talking to and pitching. would morph the sales tape and the pitch deck into whatever it needed to be. And we were, I'll tell you, Bev, we were so close with multiple partners to getting something going. But I started to notice, you know, like more than two calendar years had gone by, and we had just been in sell mode, pitching and selling and getting close and having a follow-up call. But I started to get the feeling, because I would hear different versions of the same statement. Everybody was so interested. Oh, so interesting. How is this story not known? But in terms of content, is it food or is it history? There was this nervousness with most potential partners about breaking, what is the entry point for this film? Is it food or history? Because food is considered, you know, light content, whereas history is heavier. And there was definitely a nervousness about trying to combine the two, but clearly it is both. So I started to feel that we were going to be stuck on the vine eternally if we didn't just sort of take a leap of faith. So we started shooting more. And before you know it, over 18 months or so, we had the vast majority of the content for what would eventually become James Hemming's Ghost in America's Kitchen. And once we released it or had those limited screenings at film festivals and whatnot, it was very clear that this was hitting a chord with people. Folks who are, number one, interested in culinary history or foodies, documentary junkies, of which I am, and anybody who cares about social justice history, specifically Black history, they were just engaged beyond belief. We had a couple screenings that almost brought us to tears. We screened at the Fire, Flower, and Fork Festival in Richmond, Virginia in 2022 at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, and they kicked us out of there eventually because the Q&A did not stop after the movie. And yeah, it was one of those moments, Ashbel and I, when we were leaving there, just sort of looking at each other, and you're kind of overwhelmed by what's happened, because all of these people were just exposed to this story, to this man, this lost legacy, James Hemmings, that is, it's an overwhelming story, and it's an overwhelming legacy, and it's troubling to just be learning about it right now. And I mm-hmm. think people, they have an emotional reaction to that. So, you know, we're doing all we can to just try to get it out there and let people know it's on Prime Video. And just be a resource to keep spreading this story of this lost American pioneer.
So out of all of that, what would you say is the biggest challenge you faced during production?
My own mind. You know, I'll tell you what, Bev, the thing that gets you with these things, when you don't have that official partnership, and you don't necessarily know where it's going. And, you know, we did a shoot one weekend in Virginia, and I was missing. It was an event. It was an important thing to capture for the film. Everything aligned, needed to do it. But, you know, I'm missing my wife's birthday, and I was, you know, postponing my daughter's birthday party. Now, all of those things are obviously going to happen the next weekend, but you start to wonder, what am I doing? Is this going to work? Because there's no guarantee, and there's no partnership in place that assures you on the other side, no matter how good it is or isn't, that anybody's going to see it. So there's a little panic attack moments that I think are kind of natural when you are working in that passion project space. Until it's more, sometimes you really do wonder where all of it's going to lead, and then your own motivation can become an issue. I found that was always more difficult for me than any logistical challenge we faced.
People drive by, T-Mac on the radio. Got so much on your mind, nothing's really going right. Looking for a ray of hope.
is the Bev Moore Show, live streaming on the iHeart Network and on over 185 broadcast stations in 37 countries around the world. I'm Bev Moore. My interview with director Anthony Werhahn continues after the break.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
You have two award-winning documentaries in 2004, 2006, before taking a position with NFL Films in 2009.
Indeed.
How did you handle that transition?
It sounds so long ago, Beth.
I know it does.
Right?
It does seem long ago. But it really molded your future, didn't it?
It did. You know, it all does come together, and I'm thankful for all the experience along the way. And it's tempting to sort of disregard certain experiences and think that you're on to a bigger, better thing. You never know when you're going to be looking back on a certain experience as a trusted old friend and very thankful that you had it. When I got to NFL Films, I had interned there in, I think, 2004 or something like that. Loved it there, but they don't hire a lot. It's not a direct path to just walking right in the door and having a full-time job. So I went out and I was in the freelance world, production assistant work, working locations, departments, and I always tried to have a side project, something I was working on. And, you know, the most recent one before going to NFL was this documentary called Loaded that I just – a buddy of mine turned me on to this really incredibly unique publication that was happening out of Denver called Modern Drunkard Magazine. And their founder, lead writer, was sort of this almost like a cult leader personality. And he's having this big event in Denver. So I go and I do this documentary. I was actually very, very, very happy with how it came out because it was not unlike Hemmings. It was just sweat equity doing our thing. But once I got the job at NFL Films and sort of settled into the more, became an indoor cat, if you will, with production, I didn't know that I was ever going to end up back in that space where I'm trying to make movies without knowing exactly what I'm going to do with them on the other side. But then, you know, all those years later, after getting a job with Cornerstone Pictures in 2010 and working there, I'm still there to this day. It wasn't something that I was doing in terms of independently creating content, trying to get documentary content out into the world. But then, you know, I meet Ashfell in, I think, 2017. And all of a sudden, I'm very happy for that experience I had all those years before of just, you know, that muscle memory of hustling and grinding, sort of willing things to happen. Because I see you have your hands in a ton of projects, Bev, as I see. And, there is a repetition. Repetition does help with that, right? Like it gives you
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I noticed that.
It's addicting.
Yeah, it's addictive. It is. But it's your experience, and it really has helped you grow into the filmmaker that you are. What do you think are the most important elements of filmmaking?
Well, you know, I honestly think it's easy to get lost in aesthetics, and that is very important. It's always important. You don't want to make unnecessary mistakes and self-inflicted wounds in production. But at the end of the day, I really do think it's story. And that has become, I think, even more clear in the post-pandemic world where we've seen a dip that we're kind of at the end of it now, but there was a dip in production quality for a while. Even in the commercial world, we did a shoot for a beauty product early in the pandemic we were sending the newest iPhone and ring lights to models and instructing them how to shoot their own content. And of course, it did look different, but you watch it back and it still works because the writing was good, the music was right, the performances were good. So I think at the end of the day, you have to be excited about the story you're telling. And if you are, and you are true to whatever vision it is that you have, it's going to be exciting to other people too. And I certainly try to, I think it's important to get as many production elements right as you can, but I also have seen people sometimes talk themselves out of doing something because everything's not quite right yet, you know? Don't have all the funding, don't have enough resources, and hey, maybe they're smarter than me, I'm not sure, but in terms of...
But the biggest thing is passion. You have to have passion.
You really, right, because you need to grind through those moments where...
You got to grind through.
Somebody asks you, why are you going to Florida this week?
Right.
You don't have to do that. That's for your project, so nobody's paying you to do that. It is hard to get past that sometimes. You have these little moments. So I agree with you. I think passion to tell your story will go a long way, and I think it can cover a wide variety of I don't know if mistakes are the word, but when you have the core elements of your story, if you're telling a story well, I don't think that people are going to nitpick your content because everything wasn't just right. So I think it's important for people to sort of trust themselves, and if you're going to do something, you got to commit to it, because you don't want to have half-finished passion projects, for sure.
True.
That's
right.
But it's a journey.
Now you joined,
it definitely
it is a journey. It sure is. Now, you joined Cornerstone Pictures in what year? When did you join them?
2010.
2010, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that was right after you did the NFL films. So,
it was hard to leave NFL because I enjoy that place and I love football. But
I can imagine. Yeah. Now, you have produced, from what I have seen, you have produced a lot since you've been there with Cornerstone.
Very proud of the commercial content. Yeah.
Yeah. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, StarKist, Chesapeake Energy, Hershey Park, Turkey Hill, and Conair. And then collaborating with Comcast for 9 years on the expansion of the civil rights that we've already talked about. And then you also, I mean, this is a lot. I mean, I'm talking a lot. The Center of for Disease Control, tell me what exactly did you do there? Because that serves as the national focus for developing and applying disease and prevention for, you know, the United States.
I was really proud of the work we did with them, and we got that in right before the world kind of shut down in 2020. I actually started 2020 in Alaska working with the CDC on this campaign. So the campaign was about opioid prescription drug abuse awareness, and it's documentary content. So produced a series of documentaries with real recovering addicts telling their stories. And these had to fit into either 2-minute or 30-second containers, which is always a challenge. But I just felt like it was an incredible process. We were thrilled with the results. The campaign won an Emmy, which I was excited to hear. There was a still photography component to it that I was responsible for as well. So we really felt great just about the... It, not unlike the Civil Rights Project, there was a small group of people in this little troop traveling all over the country, creating these little documentaries, and we're really, really excited about how they turned out. So the CDC was a great partner, and ICF Next, which was the advertising agency who we were partnered with, were fantastic. So I have to tell you, I love the documentary world, the movie world, but it is not for a lack of enthusiasm for the commercial space. I find commercial work to be very rewarding, and I have to admit, I like the pace of it. Yeah. Unlike the movie projects are with you for years, whereas a commercial, you have a little fling for a couple months, it ends, you do another one,
and it's and it's done, right? But you still have it under your hat, you know, because that is really powerful. When I saw that, I was really impressed.
Well, thank you. And I'm blessed to work at a company that is – Cornerstone's been around for 32 years in the Philadelphia mm-hmm. area, but very, very yeah. nationally tied in. We do work all over the place. And the two founders mm-hmm. and executive producers of the company, Bill German, Gloria Lewis, are about as talented as it gets at being executive producers and understanding the commercial world and how to make clients, advertising agency folks, happy and to bring value to them. So it has been, it's a filmmaking clinic, much more so than just the art of filmmaking, but just in managing the process, the people, collaborating, working with all different types of folks, from different agencies, different clients, different budgets. So I have nothing but good things to say about Cornerstone, and I'm a much better filmmaker as a result of my time there, and I'm still there.
That's awesome. So you're based in New York City,
right outside of Philadelphia, actually, right outside of Philadelphia. Yeah, we work in New York quite a bit, though. So, I'll be there next week.
Right. Okay. And you got projects in New York City. I got you. Okay.
I do. Yeah, my next two documentary projects, both the subjects are in New York. So I'm there more than anywhere these days.
Gotcha. And you're going to be doing many more, I see. Do you have any upcoming projects that we can be on the lookout for?
So I have one that is it's a short form documentary. We are actually hoping to get this thing submitted just in time for the Tribeca deadline, which is coming at the end of this month. It is a short form documentary about Nancy Burson, who is an incredible artist based out of New York City, who has a resume that is, you won't find another one like this. Her life and her work are utterly her own. She is responsible for and sold to the FBI the technology for facial aging, facial morphing. So if there's been a missing person and they show a photograph on television of what they might look like today, that technology.
Oh, my God.
Originated with Nancy, and she conceptualized this in 1968, which is outrageous because there was no computer tech to back up a thought like that. But then once technology caught up, she gets that out into the world in the early 80s, and then went on to become a photography pioneer, doing some very, very celebrated photography series, and a painter who has had exhibits at MoMA and, I mean, all over the world. She did a Time magazine cover, in fact, just a couple of years ago. And she has some incredibly unique views on – her art is an undeniable extract of the way she lives her life, the way she sees the world. She cannot help but create art, and she has a really interesting view on reality that's a big part of the movie. And anybody who has ever done any reading on simulation theory or is interested in the philosophical ideas behind determinism, Nancy's everything that she does and says will be of interest to you. So I'm looking forward to getting that out. We're pretty much through production, still kind of going back and forth on title and artwork and all of that, but it's coming soon. I think the next month we're going to have a version of that out in the world. And I have a feature doc that I'm working on about Nina Caruffa, who is a New York comedian, and she is aspiring to be the first female hijabi boxer, professional boxer. She is hijabi-wearing Muslim who has penetrated all of these worlds and done so remarkably successful. She's going places. She's a social media influencer. She's headlined Caroline's Comedy Club. And she has decided and is completely committed to being a professional boxer at the age of, you know, in her mid-20s, never having trained to do this, and being a full-time comedian who is booked at big-time comedy gigs.
I can't
and
wait
I've been
for
at her,
this.
It's something, I will tell you. And then furthermore, she was cast on a reality show. So she is going to be, I told her I won't say anything specific because I don't think they're promoting it yet, but she will be on a national reality show later this year. So
Oh, wow. Well, we're going to close this with one last question. Do you have any advice for aspiring filmmakers who are just starting out?
Well, you know, I have to go back to what worked for me, which is, and I hate to say it, but it's saying yes wherever possible. And that can even be to yourself sometimes. I think it's very easy to be protective of our time, and reasonably so. But when you are a young filmmaker, it is better to be exposed to something than sitting at home waiting for opportunities. I think one of the unique things about this industry is the exposure, the access that you have at every level. So if I'm directing a commercial, I'm right in the same room with and communicating with a production assistant who maybe is on their first paid commercial production. And that person, mm-hmm. and that's the case with every production, TV, movies, everything. So there is this unique networking opportunity in the film world. So I when opportunities arise, I would just try to take them wherever possible because, you know, as mentioned, some of my biggest breaks came from very, very unlikely connections. And they all were rooted in agreeing to do something that wasn't necessarily what my end goal would be. Sometimes big things have humble beginnings. So I think allowing yourself to enjoy the journey and not audit situations too much. Don't find reasons to not do something. Every once in a while you might take some underpaid job on some film crew and, you know, hopefully you don't have to do too much of that. But every once in a while you will make a connection from one of those jobs or strike up a conversation, find a relationship that will be invaluable down the line. And you only need a couple of those to really make a difference.
Great advice.
Well, thank you. I'm very, very, very lucky that I've been in some of the situations that I have been, and I'm very, very grateful that I was in those situations, for sure.
You are very successful, and you've made some great choices, and, you know, everyone that's listening, I hope they take that to heart. So congratulations to you and your team, and I want to thank you for being my guest on the Bev Moore Show.
Thank you so much, Bev. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
That's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed my amazing guest,
TV and film director Anthony Werhahn. Thank you for listening to The Bev Moore Show, live streaming on the iHeart Network worldwide. I'm Bev Moore. Until next time, bye-bye.
You're vast like the ocean, yet the voices in your head have got you. You don't really know how powerful you are. Always in motion, I smile to myself as I watch you. You don't need to win me over, I've been yours. You don't need to dress it up, no, no. Don't need to put on airs to make me care. You got that golden touch, oh, yeah. I mean, I know you're scared, but are you aware? You are made of stardust. The universe inside you, yeah. A straight up miracle. It's so incredible how you sometimes can